And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and on season two, I'm joined by legendary rock star Patty Quatro, where we take a deep dive into her Detroit roots, the indelible impact of her iconic musical family, her two pioneering all-female bands, The Pleasure Seekers and Cradle, hanging with her homeboys in Detroit Rock City, and so much more. So let's get started.
We've been talking a lot about the formation of Pleasure Seekers, although you weren't called that yet. It was after your epiphany with the Beatles and seeing them. And I love this story. It's the idea that you're there with all of these screaming, crying, wailing women and girls. All and that was not your response. Instead, No. You absolutely had this epiphany that you wanted to start an all-female band. You wanted to do what the Beatles were doing, and you went home that night, called your girlfriends who you were already playing with, but right. And realized you needed to round this out a little bit more. So tell us now, who are the members of Pleasure Seekers, and how did the name come up? We talked a little bit about it, but how soon after you now formed this all-female band?
We had Nambal, who was blonde and beautiful. She was like the Nico of that age, if you ever saw a picture of Nico. The guys were crazy over her. And she had this sexy way about her and playing. She used to sing Wild Thing by the Trogs, I think it was. And they would go bananas for her. She just had this way about her. And Diane was more normal teenager look, you know, and Mary Lou was also, the ball girls were good looking. They were real good looking, blonde, and they were fairly well off. The father worked at Ford, so they got a new car on their 16th birthday. And Susie and Mary Lou, the singer, the younger one, were best friends. But being that we didn't have a ton of money, but we're still in Grosse Pointe due to my dad's hard work, there was always comparisons going on. Mary Lou would sort of, in a way, sort of diss Susie or put her down a little. She never forgot that. You know, this is things that went into her psychology of, I'm going to show you, you know.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because
it was solely a class thing?
Yeah, it was. She would just say these offhanded, like Nikki did in Fanny. You know, she'd say something offhanded that was really sort of a diss. And it would hurt Susie, you know, but she would just, they were best friends. So, you know, let it go. So that went on. And Susie was cute as a button, you know, long, dark hair, very different than what she ended up in England and changed her look and all. And me. And that was the original band. We took our first pictures on a convertible with the top down. I was a blonde in it. I was blonde then. And yeah, we'll get to the pictures.
Well, that was the look of the time. I mean,
that was the look, yeah, yeah. And so we started, and then came the Hideout audition.
So talk to us about the Hideout, and tell us what the Hideout is for people who don't know. I didn't know. You had to tell me.
In Detroit, this was part of what made Detroit Rock City. Dave Leone was sort of an entrepreneur. He wanted to build a teen club for kids, you know, that are underage. So VFW Hall, you know, just a big box. Sweaty, horny teenagers going there every Friday night to dance to the live bands. And all the live bands were learning their craft playing at Dave's Hideout. And it multiplied into several teen clubs and different people got involved. Nikki was already booking all the homeboys. So doing all that, it was like this movement happening. And we were co-check girls at the Hideout, Susie and I. So I, all bravado, I walked up to Dave one day. I said, you know, your bands suck. We can do better than that. And he took me up on it. I said, why don't you put us up on the stage? And he said, okay, 2 weeks, 3 songs, you're on.
So and he's 16 years old and Susie is 14 years old.
Yes, yes. I can't believe we were going to, and you know, we shit bricks when we got home. Okay, we got to learn 3 songs and they have to be good.
You are definitely your dad's daughter. I love it.
Well, it was all that childhood shows that we put on. We had balls. We kept them in our head, but we had them, you know. So we went home and we did Latin Loop de Loop, Twist and Shout, and Louie Louie, which was the, you know, It had the swear word in it that you weren't supposed to say. Everybody was trying to listen to it. Did they really say that? You know?
Did you say it? Did you actually say it?
Of course we did. Of course we did. And we learned the songs and we went up there and it was hilarious to say the least. The boys were all interested because it was a good looking band, right? They're all at the front. Here we are in our English outfits, you know, waistcoats and a white shirt and English boots and a tie and, you know, all dudeed out with the trend of the Beatles. And we got up there and the girls are trying to drag their guys away, but also laughing, saying, oh, this should be pretty funny, you know? So they're all waiting for us to play. And damn it, if we didn't pull it off. We knew the three songs, we pulled it off, and loud applause at the end. It was completely different. And still the girls were pulling their guys away. Okay, you saw it, you know. It was quite a night. And that was history. And then it rolled, you know, Dave booked us more. And I mean,
well, I was just going to ask, obviously Dave booked you more. So tell us a little bit about this demo tape, this two-track thing that happened at the Hideout with you and MC5. How did that come about?
Oh, that was a major gig that we played in Cradle. In Yeah, that's later at the ballrooms. They weren't even open yet.
Okay, so we're going to...
I'll tell you about the Hideout song. Dave wanted to make a single with us. So we did. We collaborated. It was a beer and drinking song. And we were the first, I can say, you know, I don't like those titles. I've said that before. First, yeah. Who did what? Who had the first album? Blah, 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 blah. It's boring, you know. But we were the first garage, earliest girl band to write a beer and drinking song and sing it in a punk fashion at the Hideout on the record, and it did real good. It was real popular on his Hideout label, and it was, that song had so many legs. It's on so many compilations. It was in the Blood Orgy of the Leather Girls, which was some horror movie in that time. It was in TV Parenthood TV show. It's been covered by bands. A lot of bands through history have done What a Way to Die in their version.
Well, I want everybody to listen to it. It's one of, I love all of your songs, but it's one of my favorites. I think more for the historic factor of it. I mean, first of all, it's a great song, but you really are so groundbreaking with this song. The
punky.
First, whatever you want to call it. It's so punky. Susie's vocals in this, I just think rock. I think the way all of you play it. But I just want to understand a little bit more. So you co-wrote this with Dave Leone?
Yeah, he came with some lyrics. We all put in our ideas and it just rolled. It rolled really well. We worked real good with him. Susie sang it. And I think Mary Lou did the screaming parts. And then Nan did the opposite side, Never Thought You'd Leave Me. And she did a sexy, you know, great vocal on that. And that was the B side. But people love to hear What a Way to Die. That's the one they really wanted to hear a lot.
I have to say that when I listen to this song now, it's incredible to think that you're writing about What a Way to Die, of smoking and drinking, and all of you were really underage. I mean, we're not talking like you were close to being of age, and there you are. I love the fact that, I mean, it even adds to the punk factor that you're speaking of these things. Again, going back to this theme of these good Catholic girls raging and rock and roll. I love it so much.
Yeah.
You know, Patty, one of the things that I've been thinking about is you're talking about performing at the Hideout, you're underage, you're singing a song about smoking and drinking, even if you weren't and never did, from what I understand, so, at all. But it also, a story you told me got me thinking about, you really were ahead of your time. You really were an influencer, even in terms of being an animal lover. And you and I recently...
Oh my God. I know what you're getting at.
You and I recently were guests on Stacey Lane Wilson's podcast, Rock and Roll Nightmares, and we had so much fun. But one of the things that I found out after the fact is that Stacey has three, or now two, pet rats, and they're adorable, and I'm an animal lover. And I will never forget the look on your face, Patty, when I told you that. And I wasn't sure if it was a look of horror, but I now realize it was a look of surprise, because you said to me, Stacey has a rat? His rats? And I said, yes, they're adorable. And you said, I had a rat, and he used to travel with us and tour with us and play with us, which this visual is incredible. And so the rat's name, you told me, was Snidely.
Snidely the rat.
And so please tell us about this rock and roll survivor, although sadly he didn't, but this rock and roller Snidely. Tell us how this happened.
Oh my God. I used to love, I don't know, at some point I wanted a pet. My parents were aghast at it. I mean, it's like, what, a rat? You know, and I had a big cage for it, and it stayed in my room. And yes, he did little tricks. And I would take him to the gig. He traveled with us. He was on a leash, and he would ride my shoulder. Nice little perch for him. And it would be hilarious. I mean, I never got fucked with by the owners of the bars, you know, and they're like, what is this? You know, this rat coming in on your shoulder. They like back away. And it was hilarious. It was hilarious. And as we traveled, we did a lot of Midwest tours, right? In Kansas. Oh God, over and over and over for years. And it was a good circuit. And one day the heat was intense and he was on the top of the toilet seat. And he fell to his death. He just fell off, heat prostration, right? And he died. And that was it. We had to find a shoebox, and we gave him a proper burial. And of course, I mean, it was sad, you know, but that was the end of Snidely.